From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Carol Bousquet with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, May 13th, 2026.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by Now You're Cooking. Celebrating 26 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath. Open 7 days a week.
Maine's public advocate Heather Sanborn is launching a legal challenge to a $360 million power transmission line in New Hampshire that will be paid for by New England electric customers.
And so it's really important that all the states have the opportunity to scrutinize this particular transmission line because we're all going to have to pay for it.
Sanborn says owner Eversource wants to replace almost 600 utility poles, even though just a few dozen are damaged. And she says the company is trying to complete the project without oversight from the regional grid operator. Sanborn and counterparts from five other states filed a complaint to block the project with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. In a statement, Eversource says 40% of the line's structures need to be replaced, and it will save money to complete the entire project at the same time. The Maine Attorney General's Office is awarding a $1 million grant from the state's opioid settlement funds to Mainspring in Kittery. Mainspring is a collective of social service nonprofits in the same location, offering help with a variety of needs from housing to nutrition to recovery support. Co-founder Megan Shapiro Ross.
To have the trust in a model that hasn't been done before in Maine, I think, is such a gift from the AG's office and such a great nod to Maine being ready for supporting community differently than we have in the past.
Shapiro Ross says the grant will help Mainspring expand its services and hire more staff to provide a faster response. A new report on challenges for the state economy concludes that affordable workforce housing should be a priority. At a press conference in Saco on Tuesday, Patrick Woodcock, president of the Maine State Chamber of Commerce, suggested that financial assistance from the state should only go to municipalities that are pro-housing.
Those municipalities that are pro-growth, unlocking housing production, should get financial support for infrastructure fundings. Also, those municipalities that are putting up significant barriers, we should review whether we should contain the growth of revenue sharing for those communities that are saying no to housing.
The Maine Economic Vision 2035 report also recommends more investment in research and development, targeting expensive electric rates and efforts to help adult learners get credentials for needed jobs. Six airports in Maine will receive almost $14 million for infrastructure improvements, according to Senator Susan Collins. Millinocket Municipal Airport will receive more than half of that federal money to reconstruct part of its runway. Knox and Oxford counties, Portland, Wiscasset, and Presque Isle airports will share the rest. For more than a century, the sardine was the king of Maine's coast. At the height of production during the 1950s, dozens of canneries fueled the economies of towns like Lubeck, Belfast, and Eastport, which was known as the sardine capital of the world. Now, as Michael Livingston tells us, there's an effort underway in Searsport to preserve that history.
Before lobsters became the best-known symbol of Maine's fishing heritage, sardines were what put Maine on the world map. This vintage film by the U.S. Department of the Interior was made in the 1950s, the peak of Maine's sardine industry.
In the cannery, the fish are packed, then cooked in those familiar flat cans. About two out of every three cans of sardines sold in this country are sardines from Maine.
During World War II, preserved fish became ideal to send to soldiers fighting overseas. While the men of Maine's coastal villages were on the water catching the fish, it was women who stood for hours in the canneries, cutting up the tiny fish and packing them into tin cans.
I remember cutting off the heads and the tails and having all these fish heads staring up at me.
Anne Scher worked at the Stinson Cannery in Belfast from 1971 to 1973. She still remembers all the sights, and the smells.
So it definitely smelled. My car, no one would go in my car because it smelled like sardines.
Scher was paid by the can and aimed to pack hundreds of fish a day. She remembers wrapping her fingers to prevent cuts from scales and scissors. But around the time Scher worked at the cannery was when the canned fish industry started to lose steam. Kevin Johnson, the photo archivist at Penobscot Maritime Museum in Searsport, says a few factors contributed to the decline.
Overfishing being a primary one, but the people's taste changing and inventions of things like refrigerators and coolers and microwaves and all these other things that made bringing your lunch or a quick meal, you didn't have to rely on something that was preserved.
Starting in the 1970s, Maine canneries began to shutter one by one, creating economic upheaval in communities along the coast.
Especially in these smaller towns where there was a cannery that employed, you know, up to 1,000 people or something, when that shuts down, it's leaving a big gap in the livelihood of that town.
The sardine industry may have left Maine, but the Penobscot Maritime Museum is looking to preserve its history. In a barn in Belmont, a group of artists are busy repainting a towering 40-foot-tall aluminum sign of a smiling fisherman. His name is Big Jim, and he was part of an advertising plan in the 1960s to sell Maine sardines. For years, Big Jim stood tall in Prospect Harbor, and hundreds of tourists have snapped selfies with him. But the sign has gone through changes over the years, including painting over his iconic can of sardines to look like a lobster trap. So the Penobscot Maritime Museum raised $30,000 to restore Big Jim to his former 1950s look.
So which blue did you want us to go with on the boots? Different blues or same blues?
Well, that first picture at the beginning is probably the best one.
Anna Dean Fowler leads the all-women artist group called the WOW Collective. She says the project has given them an appreciation for the industry that once employed their relatives.
We really appreciate all the fishermen that were part of the sardine industry. But we're also, while we're doing this, thinking about the women who were in the canneries, that whole part, important part of that industry. And so it's kind of a neat connection for us.
This summer, Big Jim will move to Searsport as the main attraction for the museum's Sardine Land exhibit that includes historic photos of people working in canneries and on the water, along with hundreds of retro advertisements for Maine sardines. For Kevin Johnson, restoring Big Jim is about preserving history, while those who remember catching and canning sardines are still around to experience it.
It was important and a big part of Maine's identity, if you will, and culture. And so to be able to celebrate it and to not wait 50 years to celebrate it is important.
The Stinson Seafood Plant, where Ann Scher worked as a teenager, was the last cannery to close in the United States in 2010. The closure made national news, and a photo of Big Jim even made the New York Times edition from that day. As for Scher, she says cutting fish for 3 years taught her the value of hard work, and she says it has paid off throughout her life.
I ended up working at an educational publishing company in the Boston area. And after the first day of work, I got called into the office by my supervisor, and she said to me, "You know, the reason I hired you was that if you can pack sardines, you can do this job."
Big Jim and the Sardine Land exhibit at the Penobscot Maritime Museum will open Memorial Day weekend. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Michael Livingston.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join Erwin Gratz for Morning Edition starting at 5 a.m. I'm Carol Bousquet. Thanks for listening.